This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I'm John Batchelor, and this is the History Debate Society. Our charter member, Michael Yon, is here. Michael's in Vilnius, and we've been discussing the Great Migration, but we're now going to move to the Cold War. Once upon a time, the Cold War crushed the Baltic states. The Stalinist regime at the end of the Second War wouldn't relent, and it continued to brutalize the people of the Baltic states. And there was nothing to be done. That was the Soviet sphere into Eastern Europe. Well, the Soviet Union failed in 91, and the Baltic states were freed. But they're not freed of concern about Russia. Michael, what can you tell us? This is Michael, who was, for a great period of his life, a member of the U.S. Armed Forces and designated to be the bump in the road when the Soviets launched their attack on Western Europe through the Fulda Gap. And then after the Soviets fell, he was getting ready for worse and worse throughout the Eastern Europe and Western Europe. But now that we come to the 21st century, you can suppose that the Russians are no longer a threat to launch an invasion in all of Europe, but not so. Michael, what can you tell us about the concerns in Lithuania about Moscow?
Right. Yeah, actually, the two Special Forces A teams I was on from the 10th Special Forces Group, we were not targeted to Fulda Gap, but the Suwalki Gap and the Suwalki Corridor up, near Lithuania, Poland, that area near Belarus. And that's a long story. But interestingly here, as you know, this whole area is like a tidal area for invasions. It's just a great, this is where great invaders come and go. They go right through here. It's just a tidal area. It's just a matter of time until there's another war here. The Lithuanians are very well aware of that and very concerned about it because they, as weapons become increasingly sophisticated, it makes it increasingly difficult for them to resist. I've got a book here that a Lithuanian Special Forces officer gave me today called We Could Not But Resist Genocide. It's about their long resistance against the Soviets after World War II. They resisted for another 9 years, and they're very proud of it. They call them the Forest Brothers. They lived out in the forest, and they had a lot of urban warfare as well. But there was not a lot that they could do ultimately to win other than fight information war. The United States, of course, helped with information war. A lot of their resistance was outside of Paris. That actually, a lot of the Polish resistance that the CIA was helping with, and that program was called QR Helpful, were also outside of Paris. Also, the UK helped, Sweden helped. This resistance, especially between Lithuanians and the Polish, is pretty famous in this area, and they build a lot of their identity on it. So a lot of the for instance, the Lithuanian Special Operations Forces, their whole myth, the genesis, it's not really a myth, but their story and why they exist is all about resisting the next invasion.
Michael, what is the concern right now? I do not believe that there's a massing of Russian troops or Belarusian troops at the border, although they're to be intermingled. The concern that you voiced a week past was information war. Now, we've had reports over the years of the Russians and their bad actor allies or stooges using cyber criminality. We know of this in the United States as ransomware. I'm guessing that they've had the same problem in the Baltic states, but also cyber spying, cyber espionage, cyber sabotage. What do they say about what they're doing about it, Michael?
It's heavy here. One of the things that they do here, and the Lithuanians are becoming famous for their prowess on information war, they have huge numbers of people that they call elves, and the elves are the ones who battle the trolls. And so the elves are the ones who are on, you know, whether it's Facebook or other social media or websites daily countering various propaganda against Lithuania. So it's a big, you know, cyber battles that are going on constantly. I've been meeting with a lot of cyber warfare experts here and really getting some interesting insight onto how seriously they take information war. I mean, they realize they're never going to have a great navy or army. And even if they did, they don't have much land to maneuver on here. And, but they can fight in the cyber world, and the information conflict, as you know, for people who are very good at it, is like having another branch of the military. People that are very good at information war can do amazing things, which is something that some countries don't seem to wake up to, like our friends in Japan. I work with Japanese 7 days a week, and God bless them. They're just not good at information war, and they never have been, but they're going up against the CCP, and they are very good at information war. They're at least as good as the Russians, if not even much better. So, you know, if you're not working on an information war ground plan, then you're just planning to lose. And that's something that the United States is facing right now. One of the great problems that we're facing with internal conflict in the United States is we have multiple very large information campaigns going on from many different actors. Some people ask me, like, who's doing it? And that's like asking me, you know, who's running the jungle? There's many things going on in the jungle. There's many information campaigns. Some are synergistic with each other. Others are antagonistic. Others are just, you know, not even touching each other. But information war is what it's about, and Lithuania is investing heavily in that.
And Michael, right now, is there any indication that there's a change in pattern? In other words, I can see the flow of trolling. I can see the flow of trying to phishing operations to try to get inside security. Have they indicated that there's a break in the pattern, more or less than there has been in the past?
Actually, one of the things that one of their experts, I met with him for, I don't know, 5 hours or so ago, a couple days ago, and he's working on the AI. And what he's working on is trying to detect when an information war is about to launch, and using AI to look at indicators that, you know, where are they about to punch us and how are they going to do it and how should we deploy to counter that. So, yeah, there's – as time goes on, these information conflicts become more and more sophisticated. Now, one thing that you're talking about is cyber attacks. I believe what you're talking about is cyber attacks to break in, that maybe hack financial information or infrastructure and that sort of thing. But then there's also information conflict, which is, you know, trying to get people to fight with each other or not fight each other or vote the way you want them to vote or, you know, not go on vacation or, you know, that's information conflict.
And right now, because it's the pandemic and history has to deal with pandemics, what is your sense of the people of Vilnius and the people of Lithuania about the pandemic? They have access to the vaccine. Are they using it? They have recommendations of distancing and masking as they see in the media. Are they practicing it?
Outside, no, almost nobody's wearing masks. When they go inside, many people do. The restaurants are open, wide open, and, you know, tonight they'll be open until midnight. And now when people go into the hotels, some have masks, some don't. Some are putting them on just for, at this time, just social habit. For instance, if you get onto an elevator, people will pick up and put their masks on, you know, but only if somebody else comes on with them. And you can tell by the way, by their words and actions, that it's just, well, let's put on our masks, that sort of thing. But mostly, no, they're kind of tired of it. And they are heavily vaccinated here. And although I've had quite a few Lithuanians tell me that they've had the virus, and some say they were not very sick, others say they were in fact very sick. And so it did sweep through here, and they are highly cognizant of it, and they're very pro-vaccine.
Was there a entry fee to come into the country? Did you have to show that you were vaccinated or that you'd had a test? And is there one when you leave the country?
No, because I came in through Spain. You remember when I left Morocco, I flew to Spain. And from there, I flew to Germany. And so once you hit Spain, you're in the EU. And in Spain, we had to show that we had a test, and that was it. And then after we hit Spain, we were in the EU, so it was good to go. And once we flew from Germany to Vilnius, it was just like flying from Atlanta to, you know, New York. I shouldn't say New York. Let's say Atlanta to Kansas. You know, there was no hassles at the airport. It was like getting off at a bus stop.
Michael Jahn, a charter member of the History Debating Society. He's in Vilnius observing the old Cold War and the new Cold War, which is cyber, as well as the threat of the sharp end of the stick. Michael will be traveling to follow the Great Migration to Panama soon enough, but for now, the mystery is, where do the migrants who cross into Lithuania, where do they go? Are they headed to Panama? Or, as Michael reports, are they headed to London, which is outside of the EU? I'm John Batchelor.